The resurrection of Christ is probably the single defining event upon which Christians center their faith. Denominations may differ on many other aspects of Christianity, but on the resurrection, there is widespread general agreement that Christ died and was raised again on the third day. Gary Habermas is a professor of apologetics and philosophy at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, and including amongst his many books he's authored is The Resurrection of Jesus and The Historical Jesus. He's in town today in Belfast and will be speaking at the Crescent Church, I think, later this morning. Isn't that right, Gary?
Correct.
Great name for a philosopher, Habermas.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Great name. And we're also joined by Michael Nugent, chair of Atheist Ireland. He's also the author of several books, the writer of a blog about atheism and happiness. Although I must add, he's a Leeds United supporter, and it's been a long time since that team brought happiness to anybody, Mike, isn't that right?
Yeah, and Bohemians. I pick my teams on the basis of financial irresponsibility.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, you're very welcome. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. We want
to talk about the resurrection and really about the rationality of belief in something like that, because none of us, Gary, have ever seen anyone rise from the dead. Why should we believe it ever happened?
Well, the approach I take, I developed this kind of an angle that when I was doing my PhD, my dissertation was on the resurrection. That's where I first got started many, many, many years ago. And the approach I took was what I call a minimal facts method. And what I did was come up with a list of data that were shared by believers and unbelievers alike, all the way from, you know, believers on the right to the very skeptical community on the left. So let's say in the U.S., for example, I would use the writings of Dominic Crossan, Bart Ehrman.
The Jesus Seminar people.
Jesus Seminar, Bart Ehrman, people like that. Maybe in Germany, folks like Gerrit Ludemann, folks like that. And so what I did was, let's take this common set of data and see what sense we could make of the things we
but
share.
But all that tells you is that Christians widely share certain beliefs about the resurrection. I'm asking you, why should anyone believe it?
Well, because if you have shared beliefs, then you have to go back in and say, okay, I do believe it, you don't believe it, what makes the most sense of this data? And if a person says, for example, well, look, this is a rather extraordinary claim, why don't you tell me if you can answer this question or that question? I think you might be able to have this naturalistic approach or that naturalistic approach, and we'll say, well, let's say which one is better on the data. So we'll talk about the data.
What kind of data are we talking about?
Okay, you want some examples?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Things like Jesus died due to the rigors of Roman crucifixion. After his death, his followers were, they despaired. They were doubtful, thought that their career was over. Probably a majority of scholars today, I've actually done a head count, a majority of scholars left to right would believe that the tomb was empty in some sense. And let me cite Bart Ehrman, for example. Bart says it's undeniable that the earliest followers of Jesus had experiences that they believe were appearances of the risen Jesus. So if you start with an actual experience, now you have to ask, what makes the most sense of that experience?
So here's the data, which the resurrection you're suggesting is the best template to explain. You have the early followers of Jesus. They respond to something in a very distinctive way,
right?
An experience.
Right.
And the best explanation we have for the transformation of their despair into hope and into courageous hope, because they risk their lives on the basis of that experience, is the resurrection.
And what you have to test is whether other hypotheses do a better job of explaining the same data.
Mike, what do you make of that approach?
Well, I mean, loads of people believe loads of things. Loads of people have experiences that cause them to believe lots of things that aren't true. Most religious people understand that people from other religions have had experiences that they just as sincerely believe are supernaturally grounded and cause them to believe certain things, but you realise that they're mistaken. Joseph Smith had an experience that made him believe that God was talking to him from inside his hat. L. Ron Hubbard had various experiences that caused him to believe that Scientology was the correct religion. David Koresh had various experiences.
All right, now that's very obvious. There are people, and there are people who, I'm not including them necessarily, the people you've just mentioned, but there are people who are mad, there are people who have bizarre experiences. Mike, incidentally, Mike, just sit a little bit back from your mic to avoid that popping. But what we have here in Gary's proposal, Mike, is not a suggestion of one person who might be a bit unhinged having an experience, but many, many, many people sharing an experience now. In terms of the conceptual, the intellectual weight we place on that level of sharing, is that a basis for saying that's a rational claim, the resurrection?
Well, no, it's not, because if you take the evidence that we have, which is mostly coming from the Bible itself, the stories about the resurrection are very contradictory. You know, in the earliest reference, you have Paul saying that the risen Jesus appeared to more than 500 people at the same time. Yet in the earliest gospel, which is the one that was later called Mark, Jesus doesn't appear to anybody. And then in Matthew and Luke, he appears to two people, and in John, he appears four times. You know, there's no consistency in the experiences that these people claim that they believe, never mind discussing whether the beliefs reflect reality.
And if this was a courtroom, Gary, that lack of consistency might well be pressure on your position.
Well, now what I propose with using common data is that we would only use data that both sides have. So if someone says, well, there's some disagreement about fact A or fact J, you'd say, well, then let's throw those out. Let's use the ones we have in common. Now, Mike mentions Paul is the earliest, and then Mark doesn't have appearances, which is the contemporary view. But Paul's report comes much earlier than Mark's. So I think that's it's clear as a report it trumps. For example,
so you believe Paul more than Mark?
That's unanimous today in critical scholarship. I mean, Bart Ehrman, for example, Michael Martin, who's one of the best known atheist philosophers who do this, he'll start like this. He'll say, the Apostle Paul is the best eyewitness data we have of the resurrection of Jesus. So he starts, it's normal
but
to
don't
take,
you believe all of these biblical texts are equally the Word of God, equally valuable, equally inspired, equally trustworthy?
Except that, now that would be to borrow from a faith-type approach. If I'm going to use an historical approach, I'm going to agree to the common data that they have.
And that's data that's accepted even by people who are atheists.
Correct. I would give priority to Paul. For example, Bart Ehrman makes no bones about, in his introduction to the New Testament, no matter how far critical scholars go to the left, they will allow Romans, 1st, 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Philippians as authentic writings. That doesn't mean they're inspired, it just means they're authoritative.
And you believe as an historian? You can come up with a rational argument that takes you to the resurrection without bringing any faith presuppositions or assumptions in. It's all in the history. It's all in the evidence.
I would say that. And even, again, I'll use Bart Ehrman for an example, or Dom Crossan. If we were dialoguing in a university, they would use the exact same data and we would argue about the data.
They might have different conclusions about it, Mike.
Well, Bart Ehrman comes to completely different conclusions about the resurrection from that data that you're talking about. He believes that historians can't make claims about the resurrection because historians evaluate what most probably happened, and the resurrection is a theological claim about a miracle, and miracles by definition are the least likely things to have happened. But if you go back to Paul, which you seem to be doing there, I can understand why you want to get away from the Gospels because they're so contradictory, but if you go back to Paul, you lose the empty tomb because Paul says nothing about an empty tomb.
Yeah, on your point about Paul, what I'm saying about Bart Ehrman is not that Bart Ehrman agrees the resurrection happened. He's quite skeptical.
He agrees on the basic data.
As you know. But he would say, let's begin with 1 Corinthians chapter 15 because the most authoritative account. And by the way, Richard Baucom, Cambridge University, Baucom says the consensus view today is that creedal material from 1 Corinthians 15:3 and following can be traced all the way back to 30 to 35 AD.
But take Mike's argument seriously, though. He says, if you want us to take you seriously as an historian approaching this, not as a theologian approaching this, then you need to have a probabilistic approach to explanations.
Correct. I have no problem with that.
A miracle explanation is the least likely, probabilistically, of all explanations.
Miracles are less common than normal events, or they wouldn't be miracles. But we still can ask the question, are there data with which we can deal? I mean, for example, I was talking last night, several of us were sitting around the dinner table, and we were talking about near-death experiences. They're very, very common in the literature. They've been written up in more than a dozen medical journals. And there seems to be some serious evidence from near-death experiences of an afterlife. If we were to talk about that, for example, and I were to say...
Well, that's debatable. That's very debatable.
It is.
There's evidence of a near-death experience, whatever that means, but it's a conclusion one might draw from that
right,
there is an afterlife.
There are
you don't have to draw that conclusion.
Well, you're going to be pretty hard-pressed to explain the evidential cases. See, what happens is people will be flat brain or flat heart and report something that goes on down the hall or in the next room when the brain's not working. All I'm saying is, if there is a case to be made for, let's call it, minimalistic afterlife, then you say, well, let's talk about resurrection. A person can't say, well, that's impossible. There are no such thing as resurrections if we have other data for things as afterlife, for example.
Mike, do you obviously start with the naturalistic assumption that resurrections are impossible, yes?
Yeah, well, miracles are not, as Gary suggested, they're not things that are merely improbable. Miracles are happenings that defy the laws of nature.
They're counterexamples to the laws of nature.
And that suggests that there's some kind of supernatural intervention.
So are you starting with the assumption, Mike, that no measure of evidence could ever persuade you a miracle takes place?
No, I'm starting on the basis that there's good evidence that our universe came about naturally. There's good evidence that humans invented the ideas of gods, and that evidence is more persuasive than the idea that there are supernatural interventions. Now, if there was to be new evidence that I'm unaware of, I would be quite happy to accept it. That's the difference between...
You'll hand in your atheism card tomorrow.
Well, exactly. That's the difference between the scientific approach to accumulating knowledge and the religious approach, is that science tries to prove itself wrong, whereas religion tries to reassure itself that it's right.
Well, Mike, one question on the philosophical comment that there can't be this, and I have to start with this naturalistic type approach. That is true if naturalism is true. But naturalism has to be established if it's a jumping off point. And I would say one huge problem with naturalism is that naturalism isn't established by positive evidence. It's often assumed, or it's established by means that are not unlike the way religious people talk about their beliefs. Naturalists among themselves talk as if they're card-carrying naturalists, and so they have to accept it as true. But I mean, evidence that would prove naturalism, I mean, in logic, for example, proving the universal negative is extremely, I mean, if not impossible, it's very, very hard. So
can you imagine any evidence that you would accept that would disprove the resurrection claim?
Yes, if somebody could come up with a naturalistic theory that could explain the data better than resurrection, that to me is what it comes down to historically.
But from a naturalistic point of view, even no explanation is better than a supernatural explanation.
That's the point. If you can establish naturalism. Now, on what does naturalism, what is natural, besides saying...
That sounds like part two of this conversation, because we're really out of time.
You're right, but that's a great point. But what I'm saying is you can't assume a worldview and then use it against another one. I'd have to know what the ground for naturalism is.
Mike, let me give you half a minute.
Yeah, well, very briefly, every generation we learn more about how the universe operates, and every generation religious people explain the parts that we don't yet know by attributing to gods, and every generation we move more and more explanations from the God did it to the naturalist explanation. And that's a consistent pattern. You never get things moving in the other direction, where at one time we believed that a scientific explanation was best, and now we believe that a God did it.
Michael Nugent, Chair of Atheist Ireland. Thanks very much, Mike. And thanks also to Professor Gary Habermas, who will be speaking. What time are you speaking today, Gary?
Half
past ten, I think it is. Is it half past ten? Something like that. Crescent Church in Belfast. So you want to hear more from Gary Habermas, that's the place to find him. Thank you very much for coming into the studio today.
Thank you for having me.